The Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Katra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're opening up a world of stories many of us think of as, well, simple, maybe nostalgic. Children's literature.
Yeah, exactly.
We're doing a deep dive into Kimberly Reynolds' book, Children's Literature. It's a really authoritative work.
And it's so important, this one, because Reynolds just completely reframes how we look at those books that, you know, shaped us as kids.
Right.
She argues it's not some minor form of entertainment on the sidelines. It's actually a dynamic, pretty complex cultural force.
So our mission here is to unpack her main argument, which is honestly quite provocative.
It is.
That children's literature isn't just harmless fun. It's actually an ideological battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
The main place where society's anxieties, its power dynamics, its core values, they get negotiated and passed down.
Yeah, generation to generation. And here's why this really matters for you listening.
Mm.
Those stories you read when you were, say, 5 or 10, they're basically the first frameworks you got for understanding things like identity, justice, even social responsibility.
That's a powerful thought.
It is. So understanding the sort of historical and ideological weight these books carry gives you this critical lens. You can re-examine the very foundations of your own worldview.
Okay, so before we really get into that battlefield, we should probably introduce the person who's guiding us through it, Kimberly Reynolds.
Absolutely. She's a distinguished professor of children's literature at Newcastle University. And, I mean, for over 30 years, she's been a leading international voice in this area. Really knows her stuff.
Clearly. She's got the credentials, like the International Brothers Grimm Award for her work. Mm-hmm. But what makes her viewpoint so, well, compelling isn't just the awards, right? It's her approach.
That's the key thing, yeah. Her interdisciplinary approach. She doesn't just look at plot and character, the usual literary stuff. She deliberately connects it all to sociology, psychology, cultural studies. She sees these books as active agents, like things that can actually drive social change.
Wow, okay. Active agents. So things like feminism or changing views on class or multiculturalism. Reynolds is saying you can trace these huge societal shifts through kids' books.
Precisely. They're not just reflecting society passively. She argues they're actually levers, you know, helping to push cultural change forward.
Okay, that sets the stage. So let's dig into the book's central argument then.
Right. The core of it is really dismantling this common idea that children's literature is simple or, you know, not that important.
Marginal, yeah.
Exactly. She argues that if you study this genre, you get this incredible insight into the social, cultural, political values of the society making these books. It's like a really precise cultural barometer.
Which brings us straight to what I find the most, well, fascinating structural thing about it all. The defining paradox.
Mm-hmm.
The whole category is defined by who it's for kids, but the actual content, it's totally filtered through adults.
Completely. Adults write them, adults publish them, adults buy them, adults decide which ones kids even get to see. The gatekeepers.
Adult gatekeepers. And that sets up this fundamental tension, doesn't it?
Absolutely. It's this constant push and pull. The adult creator versus the child reader. And it leads to this perpetual struggle over what the books are even for. Is it to instruct? You know, didacticism.
Teach a lesson.
Or is it just to delight? Pure entertainment.
And Reynolds' point is you can't really pull those two apart. Ever.
Never. She argues all children's literature, doesn't matter if it's whimsical fantasy or a basic picture book, it's inherently ideological.
Even if the author just thinks they're telling a fun story.
Yeah. Even then, they're still promoting a certain way of seeing the world. Intentionally or not, it's baked in.
Okay, let's get into the history then, because understanding how this all started really shows how that battle for the child's mind became a thing.
Good idea. So before roughly the 18th century, there wasn't really a distinct category. Kids just read what adults read, basically. Myths, fables, maybe simplifies grown-up stories.
Right. And then the Enlightenment philosophers came along.
Exactly. They started seeing the child's mind as valuable and crucially as something you could shape. First up, you've got John Locke.
The tabula rasa, blank slate.
Right. The blank slate idea. So if the mind starts empty, well, you got to be really careful what you write on it. Texts needed to etch in the right moral lessons.
Which led to those really rigid, super didactic books we hear about. All morals, all instruction. Not much fun, sounds like.
Pretty much. The goal was control and education. plain and simple.
But then you get the counterreaction with a Jean-Jacques Rousseau.
Yeah, a complete contrast. Mm. Rousseau believed the child was naturally good, this sort of noble savage. It was society and its stuffy books that corrupted them.
So he was all for natural education. Less books, more experience.
Exactly. Famously suggested maybe only Robinson Crusoe as kind of a manual for self-reliance, almost no other books.
So you have instruction versus basically anti-instruction. And then who steps in?
Commerce. This is where John Newbery becomes this key figure in the 1740s. He figured out the magic formula, really.
Which was?
If you want grown-ups to buy the books and you want kids to actually read them, you got to mix the instruction with some fun. His Pretty Little Books were the first to really nail that combination of learning and pleasure and sell it.
Ah, the birth of the commercial market?
Pretty much. And that insight really opened the door for the 19th century, what people often call the golden age of children's literature.
This is where we see that big shift, right? Away from the heavy moralizing.
Definitely. Towards imagination, fantasy.
Yeah.
It was kind of a reaction against how stifling the earlier books had become.
And the prime example has to be Lewis Carroll's Alice's Adventures in Wonderland.
Oh, absolutely. It was totally revolutionary. Why? Because it just delighted in breaking logic. It poked fun at rigid adult authority figures. It celebrated nonsense.
It was like the literary version of a kid ignoring homework to build a blanket fort.
Uh-huh, exactly. It was this huge validation of play and the unique way kids see the world.
But Reynolds makes sure we see the other side of that coin too, right? The golden age wasn't all subversive fun.
No, definitely not. You also had the massive popularity of adventure stories.
Mm-hmm.
Think authors like G.A. Henty. Thrilling escapes for boys, for sure. But, and this is crucial, these stories were also powerful tools for socializing those boys.
Socializing them into what, specifically?
Into Victorian ideals. Things like a very specific kind of stiff upper lip masculinity, unquestioning patriotism, and maybe most importantly, the absolute rightness of the British Empire.
So reading about adventures in faraway lands wasn't just escapism.
Not entirely. They were absorbing the political scripts of colonialism, of empire. So even the most exciting adventure story had this deep ideological undercurrent. It was doing work.
Okay, so fast forward into the 20th century. That idealized Victorian child image, it starts to crack, doesn't it?
It really couldn't survive. You have the trauma of two world wars, new ideas from psychology. That whole concept of perfect, inherent innocence just eroded, and that led to a major shift in the kinds of stories being told.
This is when we get the problem novel, social realism.
Yeah, exactly. Starting around the 1960s, 70s, authors began tackling subjects that were totally taboo before. Divorce, racism, mental health issues, death.
Wow.
The argument shifted. Literature shouldn't just shield kids. It needed to prepare them for a complex world.
And along with that came a different attitude towards authority figures.
Definitely. Yeah. Think Roald Dahl.
Yeah.
His heroes, Matilda, Charlie, James, River, they consistently have to outsmart adults who are foolish or cruel or just plain incompetent.
That's a huge change from earlier books demanding respect for elders no matter what.
A massive shift.
Yeah.
It reflected a broader cultural questioning of authority that was happening at the time.
Now, we absolutely have to talk about picture books. Reynolds gives them serious attention.
Oh, yes. She insists they're not just simple stories with pictures tacked on. They are a unique, complex art form in their own right. They demand serious, critical reading.
And this is where that concept of visual literacy comes in strong.
Crucial. Because in modern picture books, the words and the pictures don't always just agree. They can actually contradict each other.
So the pictures might tell a different story, maybe a more subversive one.
Often, yeah. Or a deeper one. The text might say something straightforward, like Max was sent to his room, but the images show this whole rich, complex inner world. The child reader has to figure out how those two narratives fit together or don't.
And the classic example here is Sendak.
Maurice Sendak's For the Wild Things Are. It was just groundbreaking. Not just because it showed a child's anger so honestly, which was rare then, but also for its psychological depth.
How so?
Max's journey to the wild things is him processing his anger. Right. He goes somewhere wild, he masters his big emotions, becomes king, and then he chooses to come back when he's ready, when he's in control again.
So the imaginative journey is actually a tool for emotional regulation.
Exactly. Psychological mastery. That elevates the picture book way beyond just a simple story for bedtime. It's doing real psychological work.
Okay, so pulling all this history together, Reynolds identifies some major recurring themes. The first one is just the incredible cultural power of the form.
Right. It's not passive. It's an active agent in socializing us. because these stories hit us when we're young and forming ideas, the notions of justice, social roles, responsibility. They sink in deep and shape our attitudes for life.
So you really should think back, what worldview did those childhood favorites actually install in you?
It's a worthwhile exercise for sure. The second big theme is the constructed nature of childhood.
Meaning childhood isn't just a biological stage.
No. Reynolds reminds us it's a social idea. It's constantly being redefined by society. And children's literature, that's the main way societies kind of enforce whatever their current model of childhood is. What kids should be like, what they should read, what they should think.
And that loops right back to the third theme, adult gatekeeping.
Mm-hmm. Because adults are the ones writing, publishing, choosing, buying. The books inevitably end up carrying the dominant cultural values about gender, class, race, nation. The whole system embeds these politics.
Reynolds really does give us some sharp, memorable ways to think about this. Let's share maybe three core ideas that really capture her framework.
Okay. The first one hammers home that mediation point. Children's literature is never solely about children. It is always about the adults who mediate it for young readers.
Underscoring that power dynamic we talked about, it's always a conversation between generations, filtered by the older one.
Exactly. The second core idea is this fascinating paradox.
Mm-hmm.
Children's books often say things that cannot be said directly in adult literature.
Ah, the subversive potential.
Right. It makes them this unique space for exploring cultural anxieties, maybe testing out possibilities a bit more freely than serious adult fiction might allow.
Because it's sometimes dismissed as just for kids, it can sneak in critiques, like maybe adults aren't always right, maybe systems are unfair.
Precisely. It has this kind of plausible deniability. And the third idea brings us up to date. Digital technology isn't killing children's literature. It's just transforming it.
So ebooks, apps, interactive stories.
Yeah, she sees them as creating new ways to tell stories, new possibilities, while also, you know, challenging the old publishing models and how we even define reading. It's just the latest phase of that eternal tension between instruction and delight.
Okay, so this is all fascinating theory, but how do we actually use this framework? Like, in real life?
Great question. For parents or anyone caring for kids, it really encourages critical selection. Don't just look for a simple moral. Ask yourself, okay, what worldview is this book quietly promoting?
How are things like gender roles shown? Are families diverse? What kind of social behaviors are being modeled as normal or desirable?
Exactly. What script is it teaching? For educators, the application is immediate. Use these ideas to teach critical literacy and visual literacy right from the start.
Helping kids decode how words and images work together or against each other.
Yeah, which is essential training for the world they live in now, full of competing visual and digital messages.
And what about just for us as general readers reflecting on our own past?
Well, the application is personal insight, really.
Yeah.
Reevaluate those books you loved as a child through this lens. Understanding the ideology hidden inside them can give you a much deeper understanding of your own cultural programming, you know, how you came to hold certain values.
Thinking back on this deep dive, what really stood out for me was the validation of picture books.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to think of them as, I don't know, maybe stepping stones to real books, but understanding the visual literacy, the psychological depth, like Sendak helping a child navigate anger, it just shows their incredible artistic sophistication and importance.
Yeah, I agree. And for me, the lasting insight is just how much serious attention children's literature deserves, because it's for children.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a vital channel for cultural transmission. Thinking about it seriously, critically, it's basically an investment in shaping the future, in social progress. We really should treat it with that level of seriousness.
So that leaves us with a final thought for you, the listener, to mull over.
If children's literature really does act as this barometer for what a society is worried about or hoping for, what contemporary books or genres do you see reflecting our current hopes or fears? Maybe it's dystopian YA, or all the books focus on climate change now. What are we projecting onto the next generation through their stories today?
Something to think about. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.